Get ready for a whole bunch of nonsense. It's a new week at the Damage Report. I'm John Arola. Brooke Thomas is here as well.
Hi, I'm not nonsense.
No, you're not nonsense. The world is nonsense.
Just kidding.
The reactions totally to last nonsense. Night's Game of Thrones
you know
nonsense.
Me. Not it was kidding. Good. Last yeah. night was good.
I liked it too. Yeah. We're probably not going to talk about it, but we might. You never know.
We talked about it enough last
we
night
did,
and
we
this
did.
Morning.
But I kind of want to talk about the reaction to it. Anyway, we're probably not going to do that. We are going to be talking about politics, though. We've got some stuff for Donald Trump. He's flirting again with becoming a dictator or something. So that's fun. We'll start off with that. But we do have more. Joe Biden. Did you know that over the past few decades, Joe Biden's been on camera a lot? And he's spoken a lot. And not all of it looks good now or then. And so we're gonna be taking a look at some of those older videos. And we've got a couple of awesome guests who are gonna be joining us in about the second half of the show. Hassan Al-Tayeb is gonna join us from Just Foreign Policy again to talk about the Senate's attempt to override Trump's veto on getting us out of the Yemen conflict and how that failed. And so we're gonna talk about that and where we go from here on the Yemen conflict. Chris Matthews tries to be folksy with a guest, and that goes about as well as you would expect. So lots of fun to get to. We're gonna jump right into it. Donald Trump, not too long ago, was saying that the Mueller report was awesome, total exoneration, except the part where it says it's not an exoneration. And even though Mueller and his team of angry Democrats, who are all Republicans, exonerated him, he keeps going back and forth on whether he's a fan of them and them still being involved in this story. Now, about a week ago, he seemed okay with all of this. But then we found out just a couple of days ago that Robert Mueller might in fact be testifying in the very near future. It's coming up soon. And Donald Trump weighed in on this saying, after spending more than $35 million over a 2-year period, interviewing 500 people, using 18 Trump-hating angry Democrats that again are Republicans, and 49 FBI agents, all culminating in a more than 400-page report showing no collusion. Why would the Democrats in Congress now need Robert Mueller to testify? Are they looking for a redo because they hate seeing the strong no collusion conclusion? They love rhyming. There was no, a lot of kids do. There was no crime except on the other side, incredibly not covered in the report, and no obstruction, although we'll get back to that. Bob Mueller should not testify, no redos for the Dems. So he is saying that Robert Mueller, who can shed a lot of light on what is in and what is not in the report, should not testify. The president, not a fan of that.
Can we go back to that first tweet? Just, I wanna just break this down, right? So interviewing 500 people, but not 501, because you, sir, were not interviewed.
Your son was not interviewed.
Right, a 400-page report that we've seen, you know, a good 100 pages of it, and if you like just subtract all the black, okay? And I'm not being fair to that, but also—
yeah, but about 10 to 12% of it was redacted.
Right, and why did you then, we could have just used his words, we could have used his summary. Now he needs to testify because you put someone in place who kind of misled the public. Well, not kind of, absolutely 100% misled the public. So we need him to testify because you wouldn't let him talk.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, you had the Barr memo, which we feel like in hindsight misled the public about what would end up being reported.
Feels like that.
Exactly, and at the time, Bob Mueller had a problem with it. They then decided to have Barr do that press conference for no reason right before the report comes out. All of that is totally unnecessary. That didn't need to happen. You guys decided to set that up because you thought it would benefit you. Oops, looks like it's not going to, because now we have even more reason to want to talk to Robert Mueller. And I would say that even without all of that, yeah, you can have Robert Mueller testify. He's been doing this investigation for 2 years. It is complex. There's stuff that we want more information on. People would like to know, why are there some areas that we thought might be investigated that were not? How seriously does he consider the evidence of potential obstruction of justice? Was he actually suggesting that Congress should press forward on that, as seems to be the case in the report? All of these are things that you can get more information from by having Robert Mueller come in and testify.
Right.
There's great historical precedent for having the head of a special counsel investigation testify about it. Seems totally reasonable. Lots of Americans would like to know more about what was going on. The only people who seem to be against this are the ones who say that Robert Mueller totally exonerated the president. So I would assume that his testimony would be further exoneration. But of course, that's not the case. And Donald Trump at this point is not blocking it in any way. Apparently he has no legal recourse to do that, but he seems to want to. And under our current system of government, he can't, but he seems to have very little devotion to that system of government. So I would not be shocked to find out that he tried some some other way of blocking it. I don't know what that would look like, but he seems interested in it. And but Bernie Sanders also worried about that. He tweeted, "Sorry, Mr. President, you are not a dictator. In our democracy, when Congress calls on Robert Mueller to testify, he will testify." And so that is strong.
And I know it's 2019 and this is just how we do things, but this is still forever. It will just forever for me be such a weird way for the president of the United States to communicate his frustrations.
This that he's on Twitter like
bizarre.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look, we're not gonna spend a whole bunch of time talking about the fact that he went on a retweeting tear, retweeting tons of conspiracy theorists over the weekend and calls for conspiracy theorists to be unbanned from the social media networks. Like, imagine if Barack Obama had just been like tweeting about flat earth stuff. Like that's the territory we're in. But unfortunately, we don't have time to talk about it. So why don't we move forward to one other thing. Okay. More retweets from Donald Trump, actually. Donald Trump has this new theory that because the Robert Mueller investigation was going on, all of the time from when it began to when it ended was a theft of his time as president. And so he feels like he's owed back time. Anyway, so let's see where he got this idea from. Jerry Falwell had tweeted, "After the best week ever for real Donald Trump, no obstruction, no collusion. They'll just keep saying that. I don't want to have to rebut that every time we read it. But please understand that when you hear no obstruction, no collusion, they are saying that because the actual information provided in the Mueller report is more complex. So don't allow that to be normalized." Anyway, we press on. "New York Times admits Barack Obama did spy on his campaign." That's not true.
But also, and don't we hate the New York Times? I'm confused. Which one is it?
Exactly. It's fake news. I guess right, that's fake news.
Right. Well, so which one is it?
Your version of it is fake news, of course. "And the economy is soaring. I now support reparations. Trump should have 2 years added to his first term as payback for time stolen by this corrupt failed coup." So they are in favor of reparations when it is an entitled wealthy white man who gets it. And Donald Trump retweeted that. And then because he doesn't have original thoughts, he just sticks his head in a pool of slime and then just says whatever he hears down there. He then later tweeted, "Despite the tremendous success that I have had as president, including blah, 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 basically the same thing. They have stolen 2 years of our presidency, collusion, delusion, that we will never be able to get back." So apparently believing that, hey, maybe 2 more years. I mean, if it's good enough for Jerry Falwell.
Right, two just weird things happening here. One, a human being is like, I don't support reparations for slavery, but I do support them because an investigation hurt this man's feelings. Because in reality, no time was stolen from him. He wasn't forced to stop being president for 2 years. He was president for 2 years. He made decisions for 2 years. He worked as president, a new version of it at least, for the past 2 years. So what was stolen? He had people talking about him and investigating his campaign this whole time, but nothing was stolen from him. It just wasn't all peaches and cream.
It wasn't stolen. If it was, good. He's evil and I don't want his policies put into effect, but it wasn't. He still passed his ridiculous tax bill and transferred trillions of dollars to wealthy individuals and corporations. They still found time, even though it was stolen, to separate a whole bunch of families, and they remain separated to this day. They still pursued their, you know, their Muslim ban, all of that. Like, maybe we'll send some kids to Guantanamo. They had lots of time to come up with absolutely horrible ideas. To the extent that any time was stolen, it was stolen in how Donald Trump divvied up his time on Twitter, because of course he tweeted about the Mueller investigation hundreds of times over the course of the 2 years. He could have chosen not to do that and would have, in fact, had he not chosen to tweet about it constantly, it would have been a smaller story. And maybe then would not have cast as dark of a shadow over his presidency. If he wouldn't have continually given people reason to believe that he was guilty of something because of his every word and action. The fact that he was trying to bully witnesses, continuing to do that, by the way, and putting pressure on Robert Mueller not to testify in front of Congress. All of that, that is him. That is his choice. So no, it was not stolen from him. You don't get 2 extra years. And I know that he's just trying to get people wound up or whatever, but I have this weird devotion to our constitution and our form of democracy, and I don't like people even joking about getting extra time because they feel like it was stolen from them.
Right.
I happen to feel a lot of Barack Obama's time was stolen by the fact that the Republican Senate refused to literally confirm anything, pass anything. He didn't get his seat on the Supreme Court. Talk about stolen. That was something that was stolen.
And if we're just switching things up and just doing what we please, then he can have a third term. And all of you wonderful, well, I voted for Obama people, then you know, you can do it again.
Okay, we'll see about that.
Right.
I don't think that's gonna happen. Anyway, we are gonna take a short break. When we come back, lots more to get soon.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Lots going on domestically, and joining us now to break down some of these big topics, Aaron Ryan, host of Hysteria on Crooked Media. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. I feel like we've been talking a lot lately, actually.
I know, we're like almost best friends at this point.
I think we're getting there. We'll see if that gets messed up through the course of this conversation, but we'll do what we can. So first of all, Nancy Pelosi was interviewed over the weekend, and one of the things that she said was a bit of advice for the Democrats running in the 2020 election. And she said that it was really like two things tied together. She's afraid that Donald Trump might not accept the results of the election, and she feels like to make sure that there is a smaller chance of that, that Democrats should run as centrists. And she thinks that that makes it less likely that Donald Trump will contest the election. What do you think about both her fears and also her advice?
Well, I think I woke up on the cynical side of the bed this morning, John, because Nancy Pelosi's role is primarily to be a fundraiser. And I think that's exactly the sort of thing that you need to say if you're trying to get people with a lot of money to give you some of that money. I think that the fact that she's not willing to begin impeachment proceedings against President Trump is indicative of where she stands with how afraid she is of Trump not stepping down. I think if she really thought he wasn't going to step down, honestly, she would probably try to start impeaching the guy. But I also think, you know, saying that Democrats need to run as centrists is something that in 2018 we saw as patently false. Now the Democratic caucus looks more like Democratic voters than it ever has before, and it's more progressive than it has been in recent memory. So I think that we have a very recent counterexample to that. My take on it is Nancy Pelosi is saying what she needs to say in order to get people to raise money for Democrats. It's cynical, but I think that's probably closest to the truth.
Yeah, I share the same sort of confusion over how exactly you square saying, I think that this guy might, for the first time in American history, not abide by the results of an election. Oh, but also don't even talk about impeaching him. That's crazy talk, by the way.
Right.
And trying to spin the 2018 election as being like something that had nothing to do with Donald Trump, when one of the main draws of a Democratic Congress, especially in a time when they're not going to be able to pass legislation, is investigations of Trump, getting access to his tax returns. They were running on these sorts of things. And I feel like it's a weird sort of revisionist history from her to pretend that wasn't the case and that there were no big progressive wins in Congress that time around.
Yeah, that doesn't really make a ton of sense to me, but it does make sense if like you're trying to make rich people less scared. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's undeniable that Donald Trump's presidency has been beneficial, at least financially, for people with a lot of money. And I think that if you're a Democrat who is a donor in the donor class, you're probably somebody who's a little bit hesitant about upending that entire apple cart, if you will. Nancy Pelosi's comments, though, don't really anger me or upset me because they seem to me like a means to an end. And what matters more to me is how she works with the caucus that's in the Democratic chamber in the House.
Aaron, so I'm just curious about your thoughts on, I guess, society as a whole responding to this, because are we all just cynical? Have these past couple of years just been that bad that, or do Nancy Pelosi's words just not really hold that much weight? But I would think that the Speaker of the House saying the president, for the first, as you mentioned, John, for the first time ever in history, may not step down if he loses re-election, that should be massive news, but nobody seems to care.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's true. That's the thing. We just had an election. We just had an election that was a spanking in a lot of ways to Republicans. And so nobody contested that. You know, President Trump wasn't out there fighting election results, especially like out here in California when we were doing recounts weeks afterwards and the margins of victory for Democrats were come from behind in last minute. We didn't see that happen. So I think that it just doesn't read to me as something that's true. It just seems like scaremongering. And yeah, Brooke, I think it is a testament to the fact that we're living in a very cynical time. But I think it's also the, I guess the silver lining of this is that a lot of what Democrats have fought for in the House has been anti-corruption measures, measures to get money out of politics. We're seeing some 2020 candidates really push hard for campaign finance reform. And arguably that wouldn't have come out as urgently if somebody like Donald Trump wasn't the president.
So I want to turn now to another topic in the news. We're pledged here that when the various candidates for the Democrats nomination come out with a big plan, we want to address that in a serious fashion to incentivize them to do more of it. And today, Cory Booker has his big gun control proposal, which has a lot to it. We're not going to touch on everything, but it involves sitting down for an interview, getting a license, establishing a national database to register and track guns. It has a limit on purchases, one handgun a month, a number of different components like this. What did you think about his plan? It certainly seems to go a little bit farther than other plans that we've seen.
Actually, the first thing I thought of was a classic Simpsons episode where Homer Simpson wants to buy a gun and is subjected to a waiting period. And he said, oh, waiting period, but I'm mad now. I think that waiting period to purchase
that's great.
I think a waiting period to purchase guns is complete common sense. I grew up in a part of the country where everybody has guns. I grew up with guns in my house. My dad is a hunter. He hunts and uses them as tools, and we would eat the things that he killed. So I have a full understanding of the way that guns can be used as important tools, especially to rural people and especially to people who are rural and don't have a lot of money. They're important for sustenance. But at the same time, I think that there is nothing wrong with making sure that people have that people who have an instrument that is literally designed to kill are of sound mind and that are capable of wielding that instrument responsibly. And I also think that, you know, I was thinking about this today. I was thinking about the Parkland kids and how huge an uprising it seemed after the shooting in February of 2018. I was thinking about how huge it felt at the time and how little has actually changed. Now, we have gotten hearings in Congress about gun control. We did elect Lucy McBath in Georgia's 6th, I believe, unseated Karen Handel, who was like very pro-gun, and Lucy McBath was like, she ran against guns. So we're seeing really encouraging things happening, but we didn't really see anything huge happening commensurate to the uprising after Parkland. So it's really encouraging me, I think, just for morale to see a major 2020 candidate using this issue as something that's front and center, because it makes us feel, as people who care about this, like something is actually getting done, that it's not just window dressing, that it's not just political point scoring. So I'm pretty happy with the fact that Booker has started this conversation, and I hope it continues with other candidates.
I agree, and this is the sort of topic that I'm sure he is gonna get attacked on from the right. There's no confiscation of firearms or anything like that, but they will spin it that way. What do you think about from him? I mean, not to say that he hasn't had other proposals, but this is the first one in a while, a big one. And it's an area that I haven't seen a lot of action from other candidates on. Him choosing to focus on this particular topic, what do you think about that strategically?
I think strategically it's really smart. It's something that a lot of Democratic voters care about, as we saw in 2018. And it's something that Cory Booker obviously cares about if he cares about connecting with Democratic electorates. So I think it's a really brilliant move, especially I would love to hear him talking about it though. I think that's the final piece of this. Like, I like what I saw when I was reading about it today, but I'd love to hear what he has to say. And I would love to see him debate somebody who disagrees with him on it and see him hold his own in the debate.
Exactly. And I'm assuming that, you know, we might not get much talk of climate change in the debates as I'd want, but the guns have got to come up at least a couple of times, hopefully. I want to get your impression on one more story. As of today, Michael Cohen is going to prison for 3 years for crimes I know it's a sad day to see him go, but he'll be back in 3 years. He committed a number of crimes, some sort of uniquely his own, others that he says were done at the behest of the president, which is a thing that people seem to have just forgotten in the past couple of months, that he said that the president told him to commit felonies. Whatever, I guess we're moving on. I guess we'll let the voters adjudicate it in 2020. But in any event, on his way out, he had a little quote, and I'd like to get your reaction to it. He said, "I hope that when I rejoin my family and friends, that the country will be in a place without xenophobia, injustice, and lies at the helm of our country. There still remains much to be told, and I look forward to the day that I can share the truth." What do you think about that?
I think somebody wants a book deal. That's my first take. He can have it. Those 3 years, his prison cell is going to have a little countdown on the side, and they're all going to be hashes that count down the days to when Michael Cohen gets out of prison and he can sell his book. And you know what? We're all going to read it because we're caught in a hell cycle that entraps all of us. I'll read it because I'm actually interested in this. Michael Cohen was like Trump's bag man for a really long time. So he knows where all the bodies are buried. And he does seem like a terrible person, but he's a terrible person who is trying to appear to do right, even if it's only to appear to do right to sell books. I'm really curious what his prison experience would be. I almost kind of want him to write a TV show about being Michael Cohen in prison more than I want him to write a book about being Donald Trump's lawyer.
Yeah, honestly, when I heard that, I was just thinking like, you know what? Even if you know where some bodies are buried, shut up. I'm done with you. You had so many opportunities.
Like, right,
you've sat with Mueller, you've talked to Southern District, like you knew that you were gonna go to prison, and then you said, well, maybe now I'll say something. And even then you testified before Congress. And at this point, if we have to work this hard to drag it out of you, I don't even think it's worth it.
Wasn't 100% forthcoming. I don't wanna hear anything he has to say about positivity in the future.
Right. I think he's a guy who's seen too many gangster movies and has just like trying to act like a gangster movie, and he's just doing such a bad job of it. And it is tiresome. Very much so.
Yeah. Anyway, well, we're gonna get a reprieve of a couple of years from having to deal with him. but don't relax. You still got Don Jr. on the outside. So that's fun.
Oh, I hope for not long. I would love to see him go to jail. That'd be great.
Fingers crossed. Aaron Ryan, host of Hysteria, thank you for joining us. Hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, thanks.
We're gonna take a short break. We come back, some old videos of Joe Biden have resurfaced and they do not look great. We'll break those down after this. So in advance of Joe Biden declaring his candidacy, we said, as I think many just objective viewers of politics said, that he has a long history and he's said a lot of bad things, things that are gaffes or whatever, things that are just wrong, and that those are gonna crop up if he runs for 2020. And so he has, and so the videos are coming out. They're coming out fast. We don't have time to cover all of them, but there are a few that we wanna touch on here. The first, this is a video from more than 10 years ago, and it has to do with, I believe this one's more than 10.
They all are.
Yeah, they're all a little bit older, but one was from 2015, the Cheney one. In this one, he's talking about the community and AIDS. And I want you to watch the video. I also want you to watch the reaction on the faces of the people in the crowd in the video. Take a look.
I spent last summer going through the black sections of my town, holding rallies in parks, trying to get black men to understand it's not unmanly to wear a condom, getting women to understand they can say no, getting people in the position where testing matters. I got tested for AIDS. I know Barack got tested for AIDS. There's no shame in being tested for AIDS. It's an important thing because the fact of the matter is in the community's engaged in denial. They're engaged in denial. No one wants to talk about it in the community, and we do not have enough leaders in the community and outside the community demanding we face the reality, confront the men in the community, as well as the women, letting them know there are alternatives. Thank you.
So I believe that was 2007. It looks like it was during the primary. He was on stage with Barack Obama, who's looking just young there by comparison. He didn't have the weight of the presidency on him, and Hillary Clinton as well. And so his advice for the community, how did you receive it?
That was gross. It's gross. And it's like, oh, yeah. I don't even know. I wonder, like, just genuinely what President Obama thinks about, you know, having to stand next to that, like having to listen to that, the community getting black men to wear condoms. First of all young people need further education on safe sex.
No, it's just black people.
Just black people, right. Like what? That was so racist.
Doesn't look. So when he said, I've been tested, I know Barack has been tested, Barack looks at him like he wants to punch him. And look, the thing
is, weird.
There should be no stigma whatsoever over getting tested for it, obviously, or having it either. So
but the problem
I agree
is that
with
he
that.
Implied that it was a black disease, that it's a black problem, that black people are just like frivolously just going out there and just terrible. And they're the only ones who have problems with deadbeat dads, or the only ones who have problems with welfare queen mothers who have a bunch of kids and no dad in sight. Like it's all perpetuating the same gross stereotypes that we're still trying to break.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I get that at heart there's some weird form of condescending empathy for the community, I guess.
That wasn't empathy.
But it's like,
that was a spanking to people who are beneath him. That was not empathy at all. That was, you people need to do better like my people.
And I have gone amongst you and tried to tell you ways to do better.
Right, I've driven through the community just like George Bush flew over Katrina.
Yeah,
okay, thank you so much for your eyesight.
The knee-jerk reaction is to say there is a better way to word that. But I think they're all better, all of them. Every other way would be a better way to broach that if you were gonna broach it. If you felt that for some reason it was your thing to broach. Anyway,
the only positive thing out of that is that black people are finally acknowledged politically, because we have been living in the past few years of middle America, which is a euphemism for white people.
Uh-huh.
And so at least now we're the community.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
We're back in there. We're back.
I just wonder, more and more of these videos are gonna come out. The thing is, honestly, at this point, so this video resurfaced sometime in the last week or so. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking about it here. We're concerned by it, and we wonder how much, to what extent he has evolved, either honestly or at least in terms of the way he communicates about these sorts of things. But I do wonder, is The View gonna play this video? How many Americans are actually going to hear that? I think they should. I think it's concerning, the way that he talks about racial issues, different racial groups and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how many people outside of Twitter and YouTube are going to hear it though.
I just think that, are we going to hear a conversation on, you know what, I'm better than that now, because we haven't really gotten many outright apologies from him. And I think that's it. But at the same time, people are holding Kamala to such, and she should be held to, this high standard of, hey, we don't feel like you were as great of a prosecutor for people of color as you could have been, as you should have been. We needed you to be different, and we need you to tell us that as president, you will be different. And so I think people need to be, or want to hear, the same type of, I made a mistake, this is how I won't, this is not how I think anymore, from him.
Yeah.
All of this, as horrible as it is still not Donald Trump. And I want to be,
very clear about that.
But I think people still deserve, a response. And I'm over this whole, we'll hear about it on the campaign trail. He doesn't have time for it. He doesn't have this, let people know they matter.
Yeah, exactly.
And that you're not that person anymore.
Well, look, the thing is, if he's going to start apologizing, he's going to have to apologize for a lot of videos, because we're just getting started on this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would be good. I would, that face always gets me. I don't think that an apology is coming while he's at 35, 40 points.
Right.
Maybe if things start to get tighter, we'll see. And also, and again, I know that I will be attacked for this, but I want to acknowledge it. Even when we are doing videos that are either can be interpreted as critical of a particular candidate or are just critical, this is a video that is critical of Joe Biden. That is true.
Mm-hmm.
He's not Trump. And if there was a button that I could press to replace him with Joe Biden, I'd jump on that like Ari on a white walker. I would not hesitate for a second. I understand. I'm a shill or whatever, you can attack me for that. I choose the best option in every election, in the primaries and the general election, and I will do that same thing going
forward. I noticed there was weird criticism. I see this all the time, and I'm glad that you said that, but but you guys voted for Hillary, so you're this or you're that. That actually was the best choice in the general election. I think you are a terrible person if you didn't vote, or if you voted the other way instead of voting for her. That's just my opinion. These were the options laid out.
Mm-hmm. Look, I get that it's complicated.
It's
but
not.
I don't regret my vote at all.
Right.
And my vote was the same as Bernie Sanders voted that way, and AOC voted that way, and literally every one of the strongest progressives in this country voted that way. So I will not apologize for that even for one second.
You shouldn't.
And we'll do it again.
It's not difficult, and it's not complicated. It's like, get over yourself. That's what the primaries are for. Everybody gets to spread out, have tried their hardest to get their best candidate out of 6,000, thanks to the Democrats now.
Yeah.
Looking at you, Howard Schultz, but.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Howard Schultz. You reminded me.
I know, I'm sorry, but when there's two, God. I mean, come on.
Okay.
Or I guess there were four.
So we're gonna end just a little bit early. We have another video. Hopefully we can get to it at the end of the show. Okay. But anyway, we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, I guess the opposite of progress on getting the US out of the conflict in Yemen. But there are some paths forward, and we'll break those down after this. Not long ago, the Senate passed a historic vote on our future involvement in the Yemen conflict and asserting the powers under the War Powers Act that they should be in charge in this. And Donald Trump, of course, vetoed it. So last week, they attempted to override the veto, which unfortunately failed 53-45. Joining us now to break down that vote and where we go from here, co-director of Just Foreign Policy, Hassan Al-Tayeb. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Hey, thanks, John.
Good to have you here. So I'm assuming that you were not surprised, unfortunately, by the result of that override attempt.
No, the Trump administration indicated that that's what they were going to do. So, you know, we may have lost this vote, but I'd argue that we still have all the momentum here. We've got bipartisan majorities in both chambers of Congress that want to end this war, and they actually still have several ways they can do that. For starters, Bernie Sanders actually threatened to use the War Powers Resolution again if need be, just shortly after that override vote that you mentioned. Some are even arguing that he use a concurrent resolution next time, which could pass with a simple majority and become law without even a presidential signature. So that's on the table. The other vehicle that they have a few other vehicles, but the next one I'm going to talk about is the National Defense Authorization Act. They can actually vote this summer in just a few months to defund every part of our involvement in the Saudi-led war in Yemen. We could end logistical assistance through that, mid-air refueling, targeting. We could actually stop arms sales through that boat, and even end, you know, small like repair parts to their munitions that we send them. Finally, I actually wanted to bring this up too. There's the possibility of legal action. As I've mentioned to you before, Congress has the power to declare war under Article 1, Section 8. And some legal experts even want Congress to file a lawsuit against the Trump administration. So there's a lot of discussion about that right now. So the passing of SJ Res 7 was the first time since 1973 that both chambers actually voted on War Powers Resolution. And if Congress doesn't go to court and doesn't file legal, doesn't pursue this legal path, there's actually some dangerous precedent that could be set for future administrations just to continue to wage unlawful war without authorization. But if Congress does bring a lawsuit up, they can actually win by invoking the 1952 case Steele seizure. In this deliberation, the Supreme Court rejected Trump's, the Supreme Court rejected Harry Truman's assertion of unilateral power to basically seize steel mills during the Korean War. But the Supreme Court overturned that and basically said we have to uphold checks and balances. So a lawsuit on this, you know, on this really important vote, I think is just really important to pressure justices like Kavanaugh and Gorsuch to confront this moment of truth. Do they take their claims seriously right now that they are originalist interpreters of the Constitution? Or are they just going to be another rubber stamp for Trump?
Well, look, I share your concern about the precedent that's being set, and I do think that trying to take this to the Supreme Court might be a good path, because I am worried that there's not a lot of areas where Donald Trump has had to exercise the veto, obviously, the construction of the wall and this so far. He seems pretty devoted to those two things. And so I wonder if anything is short of going to the Supreme Court, you know, sidestepping his executive authority to whatever extent is possible. I feel like if anything else was passed, he would try to get involved. I don't know how much respect he has for, you know, if they were to defund. I don't, do you worry that the sort of normal processes of government, the normal checks and balances between the legislative and executive branch, on these sorts of topics, is he going to feel bound by those?
You know, that's the million-dollar question. I think it's up to us to, you know, take it to the limit, to keep forcing Congress to make votes, to keep forcing these questions, and kind of let the dust settle. I do think that we still have institutions that work, and that if we exercise them to the full extent of the law, that they will hold true. Now, I hope I'm not naive on that point, but I think we got to keep pushing, keep using this momentum that we have, and force, you know, force his hand.
You know, it occurs to me this is probably a ridiculous and naive idea, but obviously one of the concerns are that gigantic U.S. defense contractors are shipping these parts and weapons to Saudi Arabia. Has there been any thought given? Is there any chance that any sort of popular pressure on the corporations themselves might have any chance of modifying their behavior? If we, even concurrently with efforts inside of DC, inside of government to affect this conflict, that perhaps by putting pressure on these corporations, is there any chance that that could be helpful?
Absolutely. So there is a whole divestment campaign that in the wake of this past vote, there's a lot of the activist group that I'm in coalition with that have been talking about this very thing, about targeting universities that get funding from Saudi and the UAE, targeting hospitals, and just trying to really, you know, make a statement here and put as much pressure as we can. I know their Massachusetts Peace Action, they've been doing a lot of rallies, working with student groups around MIT, putting pressure there. So I absolutely think that's got to be part of our response to this veto override failure.
And I have one more question for you. So as this is going on, as we're having this back and forth inside of the US, inside of Yemen, are there any major developments that give you hope that there could be some sort of natural or unnatural resolution to the conflict? Are there any signs giving you hope? I know that there had been peace talks just, you know, a handful of months ago. What is the situation like inside of Yemen and Saudi Arabia?
So the humanitarian crisis continues to get worse, unfortunately. I hate to be the bearer of that news. Since the start of the rainy season, there's been an uptick in cholera. We've got about 1.3 million cases of cholera there, 10,000 new cases each week. As far as the peace talks go, now, December 13th, the original passage of the War Powers Act and the December 13th vote that the Senate made on SJ Res 54, that led to that first ceasefire that you mentioned. That actually has held. It's been fragile. There have been violations on both sides, mostly on the Saudi coalition side, but it has held and it has protected the port of Hodeidah, which from a lot of airstrikes, which would be devastating. I mean, that's the main lifeline for Yemen for so much of the aid that gets into the country. So that's good. We want to build on that. So there have been a few other breakthroughs. I think just a few weeks ago, they actually agreed to redeploy forces. So now that the troops that are in Hodeidah, they want to move them out. We don't have a timeline just yet. So that's kind of where we're at now. It's been a slow, shaky, fragile process. We have seen forward progress. But I think it's really critical that Congress continue to put pressure, because that's when we've seen the breakthroughs happen. And this National Defense Authorization Act vote is so key. I can't stress that enough.
Yeah. Hassan El-Tayeb, co-director of Just Foreign Policy, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, Chris Matthews talked after this. So earlier in this campaign season, there was a brief bit of conversation about Kirsten Gillibrand and whether she was too harsh on her employees. Was it Gillibrand or was it Klobuchar? I don't remember for sure. It was one of the two. It was a minor little controversy. And we rapidly moved past it. There was an article in Huffington Post. Apparently cropped up again. So Chris Matthews is talking about whether some of the presidential candidates are too harsh on their employees. And look at the way he decided to spin that particular point.
My one question to you is, was it like that working for other politicians? You've worked for politicians.
I've definitely worked for politicians.
They all insist on slavery?
Come on, you're talking to a woman of color here, right?
No, man, I'm
like,
serious.
Nothing compares
some bosses
to
are notoriously bad to people, and they do humiliate their people.
I mean, bad to people, humiliate people, still very short of slavery. But yes, there have been some bad bosses out there, but nothing to the degree of what we see happening in the Trump administration, where he is actually creating this web where people get entrenched in it and can't find a way out. But honestly, there is a reality that there are some people who are in his administration who completely feel fine doing his bidding because they believe in what he's doing.
Lyndon Johnson was an awful man to us. He did treat them like slaves. And the fact is, it didn't get it. We didn't hear about it till later.
We're only laughing because it's laughing through the pain. Okay. This is so ridiculous. He tripled down. Like, he was like, I'm going to completely ignore what she's saying, talk over her a little bit. And then when she stops talking, I'm going to make sure it's very clear that I am comparing a mean politician to putting someone in chains, forcing them to work for free, raping them, beating them, murdering them.
Yeah. So he says his idea, he's like, it's like slavery. You start talking, I quickly cut in, no, it's like slavery. And then like, okay, I let you talk. So you talk for a while, and then I say, it's like slavery. What do you think, George Will?
So bad.
Like, he turns the conservative commentator to agree with him.
It's also such a horrible microaggression, and it also does say that you can't, I don't think that you can be a person and say that you actually believe and understand and empathize with what those people had to deal with. And what's the horrors that slavery actually was, if you would still in this day, after all the education, after everything we know, compare somebody being mean to
slavery.
What we know of as slavery. There are other horrible tragedies that have happened in this world that people don't compare mean people to. Do you know, for a reason.
What if he just tries to, he tries to like look into the, whoever he's talking to, their past, and make it something they'd understand. Like, for me, he'd be like, it's like when the Gauls sacked Rome, huh? What about that? You Irish? It's like a diseased potato, isn't it? That's how bad this boss is. Maybe he's just really interested in people's personal histories.
No, I think that America has a history of minimizing slavery.
I agree.
Okay.
I think that's probably what it actually is.
But it is more like a diseased potato.
Probably. You know, there was a terrible, not making light of the potato famine.
Kidding.
Yeah. It's amazing that he survived as long as he has.
It's
like,
so offensive.
Like, people
too.
Talk
so
about horrible. Joe Biden's gaffes. Chris Matthews is a gaffe machine.
You get to put those two together. Can't wait for Can't wait for the rest of this election season.
Yeah, I mean, although he did, I love that people have like forgotten about this, but he did have one of the greatest moments of the last election cycle when he got Donald Trump to admit that he wants women to be punished for having abortions.
Oh, that's right.
It didn't matter in hindsight.
There should be some form of punishment.
Yeah, He's still our president, so that's great. But anyway, good work there. Just don't bring up slavery in a casual context to make it folksy. And when you bring it up, and a person who I would say has the moral authority to decide whether it's appropriate or not says that it's not, move on. I make comparisons to Game of Thrones because that's a little bit safe, I guess.
Yeah, take a third grade class. I don't know, just take a class. Maybe don't read our textbooks because they're missing a few things.
In that particular time in history, yes. Anyway, Chris Matthews.
Start over, Chris.
Yeah. But Juanita Tolver, campaign director for Center for American Progress Action Fund, who was in that video, handled it as well as, I mean, like, it sucks that you just have to deal with that sort of thing.
It does. You have to put you in such an uncomfortable position.
What's she supposed to do?
What is she supposed to do, exactly?
Yeah.
What is she supposed to do? She's supposed to get in an argument with him, like, while he's just doubling down on it and just, no.
Is she supposed to educate him in the moment? Because that's totally her responsibility and will totally result in her being asked back on the show.
Right.
Yeah, it's rough. Anyway, that's all the time we have. We have like a minute left, I guess.
Can we do some Hostmates cheating? Do we have time for
that? Okay, but you never give me time to think of anything.
Well, it's your life because I feel like you should need to.
Okay, well, you think of something super fast.
I don't have time.
Okay, great. Okay. Well, I will just say, this is because this isn't going to make it a video. I feel safe doing this. People have been hypercritical of last night's Game of Thrones episode.
Okay.
And I think for all the wrong reasons. People were like, they're trying to make Daenerys out to be a villain. Where did that come from? Have you been watching the show? That's been a concern for multiple seasons. You may not like it. I may not like it, but you can't say it didn't come from anywhere. Anyway, that's the thing about today's news that gets me the most angry. Anyway, thank you, as always, for being here on a Monday. Thank you, everybody, for watching. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.